Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's go.
Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Wednesday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters when we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times. Rocket Mortgage prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Coming up in 20 minutes, we break down Rookie of the Year, the film, part two of our breakdown as the mothership goes to the movies. And then later on in the hour, 40 minutes from now, your advanced analytics on our poll question today. Is the final scene in Rookie of the Year, the final game between the Mets and the Cubs, the worst moment in Mets history? Vote on that at Twitter's at CBS Sports Radio or also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheDA Show. We just did a champ and a chump, and if you wanted any more evidence that none of these guys actually listened to me on the show, look no further. I had mentioned the champ was Justin Verlander because he is taking his weekly paycheck every 2 weeks, I suppose, if you spread that out over 26 paychecks, 52 weeks. His $28 million a year salary, I had mentioned, what a great contribution. He's donating this to COVID-19 causes. Amazing. Very cool. Different cause each and every paycheck. As I mentioned, that's $107,000 per paycheck. I mentioned this a couple of times, and not one person here on the show caught me. Now, I should definitely not expect Mraz to do so, and it takes the D-Alien to actually do the math for us here. Mr. Fahrenheit tweets, boys, I know schools are closed and no one's learning math, but Verlander making $28 million a year and gets paid 26 times a year, that's $1.7 million per check. Oscar tweets in, who did your math on the Verlander contribution, Mraz? Again, guys, I just want to put some stuff out here. I feel awful about this. I feel like Shep here. Oh, I feel so bad that my math is so awful. It's really disgraceful. How did I think $28 million chopped down 26 times into $100,000 per? It's idiocy, pure idiocy. And by being embarrassed here, I now know what Mraz feels like. I know when you say something stupid that you think is factually correct, there's a sinking pit in your stomach when it gets pointed out. Oh my God, you're an idiot. It is a terrible feeling on national radio to be outed as a complete and utter moron. So now,
can we start a year of the buffoon?
This is a good lesson for me to know how Mraz feels. But I also have to point out, Mraz didn't catch it. Bogus didn't catch it. Bilotti didn't catch it. Nobody actually is listening to the show. As I talk, nobody actually listens to me, because if you guys didn't point this out, we would have went the entire show, posted a podcast, tweeted about it, and nobody would have actually mentioned, DA, you missed 10 decimal points in your math about Verlander.
This is where I will throw everybody on the show under the bus, but still throw myself under the bus at the same time. I didn't hear any of the Verlander stuff because I'm pulling clips for the Epic Fail right now. So I had one headphone on pulling stuff.
That but let's said, face it, if you would have heard well, it, you would not have done that math.
That was going to be my follow-up. I would have trusted your math over mine and assumed you were right anyway.
I mean, I do think that this is an inherent issue that I can say anything and nobody's going to fact-check me on this.
Well, there's certain things I can fact-check. When it comes to math equations and figuring out dollars and cents, I am always going to trust you and not sit here with a calculator.
And we have fact-checked you recently, DA.
I mean, this is a pretty big fact-check.
Now, I didn't hear – I was typing my next upcoming
well,
script
so
while
like
you were going
I said,
through this, so I was not doing full-on math. But there are other things recently that we pointed out that might have been a little off base. So we are usually listening.
Usually. I don't know. Usually I don't know. I don't know about that.
I don't know. We caught you on the first team, second team, all decade squad. There is no such delineation.
This year, there's no delineation, but there used to be that delineation?
I don't know, but this year there's not. This year there's just an all decade this time around.
Every other all decade team has had a first and a second team.
This year,
you say so, but I know this year's didn't.
And why do they make that change after 90 years of football another way?
I couldn't tell you. Our fact-checking stopped.
Okay. So something's been done for 90 years. In the 100th year, it changed, and we don't know why it changed.
Yeah, I can't comment on any previous all-decade team from the NFL or the Hall of Fame having first and second teams, but this one definitely did not.
Okay, so Mraz was editing, Bogish was writing. Bilotti, what's your excuse for not catching my terrible math on Verlander's contributions?
Well, I'm a failure at my job. That's my excuse.
You know what? You appreciate that.
Yeah, good job,
Pete. Bum, a piece of garbage, and I failed. And I'll add that to my list of failures. I apologize.
That's why Pete has to be in the office and we get to be at home in
20 essential
minutes.
Employee.
I'm going to step up as the leader here and say, you know what?
Oh, here we go.
No, hold on here. I'm gonna paint the picture of how this could happen. Now, you have to understand the basis of this is this could have happened anyway under normal circumstances. But to be fair to Pete, he's got a million things going on. He is the one of us having to deal with going in there during the pandemic. So I think he should be eliminated from a pass. Who knows
eliminated from a pass? No, should be eliminated with a pass.
Eliminated with a pass because he's got to deal. Who knows with what's going on back there? We can't see him. What's going on? I'm going to eliminate myself here because, again, I am doing something for the show. No, I'm doing something for the show. Bogish, I want to eliminate it, but apparently his excuse is going to be that we've tried correcting you as little as yesterday, and you don't want to be corrected. And the fourth of all is, I don't know how you could look in my direction, the three of you, when this whole basis of the show has been, I know nothing, I'm stupid when it comes to smarts, and if I so much as second-guess the math on anything, you guys would have scoffed at me. So I don't know how anything could be looked at my way for this.
You just said I'm stupid when it comes to smarts.
You know what I mean?
That is sentence.
I mean, I've been here a month. I still haven't cracked open a book, guys. Come on. Are you going to lean on me to get the Verlander math right?
But that Captain Crunch is gone.
And the 7 pounds of ham.
Exactly. And Mraz knows exactly how many pounds of ham he needs every single week.
If you would have presented the Verlander math and how I break down supermarket prices, yes, simplify it for me. I would have said, DA, that does not equal a half a pound of Everroast chicken breast.
And that's from the Mraz deli, too.
Verlander has 28 pounds of ham. He gives away 1/26th of it every week to a COVID-19 cause. Would you know how many pounds he gives away?
I think it's 1.2.
1.7, but not far off.
Close, see? Present things in a way I would know, and I'll correct you.
All right, this is good to know. So Verlander's giving away 1.7 pounds of ham every paycheck to COVID-19.
Now, the next question is, how many Jacques Alones is that? Because if you would have said how many Jacques Alones Verlander's giving away, then we would have definitely corrected.
That is actually a good point. That is a good point. All right. So I'm an idiot. I said $107,000, $1.7 million. Very cool for Verlander being the champ today for giving away to crisis causes in the wake of the pandemic. Now, I want to play this clip of audio for you from Scott Pioli yesterday because he was on the Zach Gelb show earlier this week, And he was talking about the worst moment of his career. He did say the worst loss of his career was being part of the Patriots front office when the Patriots lost the undefeated season in the Super Bowl to the Giants. But he said the second worst moment was the collapse against the Patriots, because at that point, Scott Pioli had moved on to Thomas Dimitrov's staff as one of the front office members, the executives of the Falcons. So the Falcons have this lead at halftime, 21-3. It gets ballooned up to 28-3 after the pick six. There's 5 minutes to play in the third quarter, and apparently Falcons executives, I guess, team employees, are in the luxury suite around Scott Pioli, loving life with the lead. And Pioli knows that there is danger lurking around the bend. If you're a Falcons fan, turn away from the radio. Here is Scott Pioli here on CBS Sports Radio.
There were times that the Falcons team, you know, we started celebrating a little bit too early at other times where, you know, we just held on for dear life. But at halftime, I was in this box and I was sick to my stomach. And, you know, there was a group of people that I was with that were also Falcons employees and scouts and front office and executives. And they were celebrating like the game was over and that the next 30 minutes was just going to be this cruise.
Imagine being up 21-3 at halftime of a Super Bowl against the Patriots and thinking that it's over. That wasn't even 28-3. And I'll never forget that night. I was watching that Super Bowl with a couple of friends of mine. We had some people over my house. And up 28-3, everybody knew that I was rooting for the Falcons. Everybody knew that I wanted the Patriots to lose. They were saying, man, Falcons got it in the bag. Congratulations. I said, this is not over. No way. They said, come on, have a beer, relax. You're so tense. I said, this is not over. It is absolutely not over. I said, if you know anything about the Patriots, then you know they are going to keep coming. Tom Brady's going to keep coming after it. They're not going to give up. They're not going to lie down. And this is the Falcons. This is a team that's never been here before. This is a coach that's never been in this spot before. This is a quarterback that's never been in this spot before. This is not over. And up 28-3, once that first touchdown was scored by the Pats, 28-10, I was like, forget it. This is going the other way. They said, go, give me a break. It's an 18-point lead. No, watch. And it kept ticking away, kept chipping away. And as it got closer, they turned to me. They said, oh, my God, you were right. I said, it does not take a football genius to realize 28-3 was not over. It might have been over if it was the flip, the reversal, if the Patriots led 28-3 and it was the Falcons trailing. Yeah, that's over. This scenario, absolutely no way. And every step of the way, Bill Belichick coached clown circles around Dan Quinn and around Kyle Shanahan, the way that they called that game. Matt Ryan was a disaster. The Falcons defense was a disaster. They only needed one stop. Even on a 2-point conversion, couldn't get the stop. But once the ball started rolling, you just knew. This happens. It has never happened to this degree for the Patriots, but this happens time and time again. You want to count them out, and it is never over. And can you believe, Mraz, the idea that Scott Pioli's sitting in that luxury suite and he's got Falcons employees dancing a jig around him? They're going, it's over. It's 21-3 at halftime. It's over. That was only halftime with 30 minutes to go. That goes to show you the sense inside that organization. They didn't realize what it was going to take to end the Patriots that day.
Also, smart football guys, have you not watched ever the NFL, ever? Did you not remember the old Buffalo comeback versus the Oilers, the Giants 49ers comeback? It wasn't like comebacks in NFL history in big games had not happened. Throw in the fact that it's still Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, the old never text a friend for jinx, Matt. This wasn't a jinx situation. You aren't a fan. You're really members of an organization. What the heck are you doing? Wake up and let the game be played for 60 minutes. The same thing you wanted your coaches and everybody to preach in a locker room and training camp. 60 minutes. Finish it. Stop it.
I actually feel terrible for Scott Pioli here. I could only imagine, because Pioli had the experience of being within the Patriots organization, but you didn't even need that experience to know right. This thing was not over. I feel terrible for Pioli to be sitting in a luxury suite with a bunch of bozos celebrating at halftime. He said he looked terrified, even up 28-3, and they said, you're being a stick in the mud. You're being a wet blanket. Lighten up. The game is over. So he's getting taunted for being scared up 28-3. He had every right to be so. And then as it wore on, they looked at him and said, my God, you were right. Yeah, you think he was right? I feel terrible. You can't enjoy that up 21-3. You can't enjoy that up 28-3. Anybody that has ever been in a tight, big, huge game knows it doesn't matter what the score is in a huge game. You assume your team will lose until the final buzzer, and even then you might assume your team has lost. And even when you watch replays, you might assume, on this replay, my team loses. If you are a hardcore fan that understands how the world works in the sports world, you are never comfortable, let alone against Belichick and Brady and the Patriots.
Now, also, doesn't this just speak volumes as to why and how Dan Quinn is still the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons? If they're that delusional during a Super Bowl, then how can you expect them not to be delusional when it comes to who's coaching their team right now, as they've continued to trend downward since then?
I don't know, which is why I think that Quinn should have been fired after last season, which I don't know why they keep running it back with Dan Quinn. He's not getting better. He's getting worse. But I have to say also, if you're anybody within the Falcons organization, and if you were dancing because you were up 21-3 or 28-3, everything in that city's sports history tells you this is not going to end well. The Braves collapses, the Hawks misery, the Falcons collapses over the years. I mean, everything in sports history in Atlanta, it all points to choke jobs. I mean, the idea that they were that confident, oh my, when I heard that story on Gelb's show, I said, you got to be kidding me. Falcons employees dancing around up 21-3 at halftime? I mean, really, then they deserve what they got.
Just a joke. I'd be embarrassed if I was a Falcon fan. And I'm picturing our old buddy Adam Klug face down in his Matt Ryan jersey on the rug after that game was collapsed. He had that as his Twitter avatar for a long time. And just disgraceful. How could you be a Falcon fan and hear that story and go, this is why my city and sports suck?
I mean, if you are a Falcons fan and you were on the edge of your seat up 28-3, you knew what was coming. These executives and these people dancing around Scott Pioli, oh my goodness, what clowns. When we come back here on the show, get your popcorn ready, part two of our breakdown of Rookie of the Year. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Roll tape.
Because there's no flying in baseball. There's no flying in baseball. No flying.
So what I do is I start tackling the quarterback, unless he get the ball to somebody else, in which case I try to tackle that person.
Say hey. Willie Mays Hayes here. Play like Mays, and I run like Hayes. How you doing?
The greatest sports movies with the greatest sports minds. Kinda.
Either we heal now as a team, or we will die as individuals.
Get your popcorn ready.
Get your popcorn ready with a DA show.
And our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home, that's hard work. Get a quote, geico.com. That's easy. So we jump back into Rookie of the Year, the 1993 film, where a 13-year-old boy ends up breaking his arm. It gets healed with the tendons tightening within the cast, allowing him to throw a 100-mile-per-hour fastball. He quickly gets signed by the Cubs and helps lead them into a pennant race. Let's now get into the baseball part of this as part of part two. Number one, as part of this baseball breakdown here, Merez, when you have Henry Roengartner getting his first taste of action in that first game for the Cubs, he comes in for a tired Rocket there, played by Gary Busey. He gets no bullpen session, no warm-up. To me, how do you treat a young arm that way? He's the golden goose, 100 miles an hour. You don't even allow him a warm-up or a few practice throws?
Well, he was warming up. Instead, they had the bullpen on the side. It wasn't in the outfield. They did have it because he had that bullpen catcher with him, so at least he got that. But we don't know how long he was warming up.
It felt to me like they put him in ice cold, and then he's all over the place. And as we talked about, by my calculations, Cubs have a 5-3 lead in the ninth. Stedman comes out. They go into Henry
Roengartner. Anymore, by the way.
They go into Henry Roengartner. He gets the final out of the game for the save. You know, you're in a pennant race right there, Mraz. To me, risky proposition bringing in a kid that you've never seen play baseball to get that final out when he gives up a home run on the first pitch.
Right, I agree. And at the time, I didn't think they were in a pennant race because, again, they weren't drawing flies. But then we later find out they must have been in a pennant race. So, yes, that is, again, speaks to terrible managing by Martinella.
I also don't like Rowan Gardner's mechanics at all. It's all arm. He's got no lower body push, no lower body mechanics. I don't think he can keep this thing up had he had some type of career. It just feels very flimsy, just coming all from the elbow. To me, that is a prescription for disaster. There's going to be Tommy John in his future if that's his mechanics.
No, I agree. And at the time, he needed a Roger Clemens to work with him on lower body and power from the legs. It's a young kid. Just he's using whatever's in his arm. And again, this speaks to problems. They don't have a real – Brickma is not a real pitching coach. And if right. he was there, he could teach Henry how to pitch. He's a thrower, not a pitcher. But when you have a charity case of a pitching coach,
right.
it becomes a real issue.
Right. Now, let me ask you, Bogues, how many of the Cubs' problems surrounding Rowan Gardner comes back to Brickma as the pitching coach played by Daniel Stern? Apparently, he's the pitching coach because he got beaned in the minors a couple of years ago or earlier in his career.
By
now,
Martinella?
By Martinella.
Which means Martinella's a pitcher, so why isn't he just helping Henry?
Right. So how much of the problems do you trace back to Brickma being a dorky, dopey, kind of lights-out pitching coach that gets caught in doorways and in his own locker room, caught in a cage for most of the playoffs?
Yeah, I see. I don't blame him. I think he's an innocent victim in all of this. I blame the infrastructure of the organization that we've kind of torn apart here over this over these two segments. Is they've allowed their manager, who, by the way, doesn't have a first name,
right.
To hire this guy
as a favor. He's like Cher or Bono. Yeah.
Right, exactly. You know, out of pity to be the major league pitching coach, and then therefore no one's there to actually take this raw skill of Henry Rowan Gardner, this gift from God, and hone it into what could have been, you know, Mariano Rivera before there was a Mariano Rivera.
My next question is, they go on this West Coast road trip and they take on the Dodgers at Chavez Ravine. Now, in this montage, they show him striking out Barry Bonds of the Pirates and then Bobby Bonilla of the Mets. Mraz, really poor scheduling done by Major League Baseball. West Coast road trip. Cubs have to somehow mix in a trip to Pittsburgh and New York in the middle of their West Coast road trip.
Yeah, who in Major League Baseball? We want to talk about how the Raiders were away from Oakland for, what, 6-7 weeks this past year in the NFL? How about Major League Baseball? You get the Cubs on a flight in the middle of the country, had them, send them out to L.A., and they got to fly back to Pittsburgh, back to New York before flying home to Chicago? How is a team – by the way, towards the end of the year, they got to go on that swing?
Brutal.
August? No time to recover the dog days. They're making trips from L.A. to Pittsburgh to New York. It's a disaster.
It makes what they are end up abling to accomplish even that much more impressive. They're in Chavez Ravine against the Dodgers. There's a pitcher on the mound for the Dodgers. I believe it's pronounced Tregaraw. It's hard to figure. They don't cite him in the movie by name.
He looks like Rod Beck.
Yes, Rod Beck, beer belly, Tregaraw. He comes in high and hard when Henry's finally at the plate. He finally gets an at-bat. He's thrown for his head. Mraz, can you imagine the PR nightmare of headhunting a 13-year-old in his first at-bat?
Disaster, but my guess would be there's probably players on other teams annoyed with the publicity stunt that
but
is
you
Henry.
But you can't bean a 13-year-old in his first at-bat. That's going to kill the league.
Zone?
It's going to kill the league.
I agree, but he has no strike zone. He's a 12-year-old kid. He's got less of a strike zone than Jose Altuve has.
Okay, all right, maybe, but you can't throw in his head. It's a terrible decision.
His head is waist high on Aaron Judge.
You can't nearly beat him. You'll kill the kid.
What's he supposed to do, ball? He should be out there.
Kill the kid.
What does Martinello let him hit for? You don't let him hit. He's a 12-year-old kid.
Okay.
Don't break the chair, Sean.
We get to the point where his mom's boyfriend, Jack, has his mom sign away his rights so that the Yankees can purchase the contract. Number one, how does his mom sign the contract without reading it? She just puts her autograph on it during the Pepsi Cola shoot. I'm sorry. If it's a 12-year-old kid with his first contract, you got to read some of the details there, honey.
Well, this is what happens when she, at 3 weeks, she's taking necklaces from Kay's Jewelers from this guy, Jack. I mean, she's so in la-la land, she wants a boyfriend, a husband so bad that she's signing away her rights.
Also, you've got the Yankees purchasing his contract this late in the season. Mraz, how does this? How do they get this by after the trade deadline? This is like a Verlander deal.
Look, I understand 93, the Yankees hadn't gone on their run yet, so conceivably Henry Rowan Gardner could have eventually been part of a dynasty. That being said, 1993. Henry Rowan Gardner, his arm doesn't even get healed till August. We're past the July 31st trade deadline.
Right.
You get why do they need him? Figure out Rowan Gardner in the offseason. They need him for after Labor Day? He's not going to be eligible for the postseason? Come on!
Why are you buying a 12-year-old's contract when he's not even eligible for the postseason?
Right, and also, I mean, buying his contract, how many year deal did Rowan Gardner sign? My guess is he probably was a free agent after the year. The Yankees could have came in and bid it anyway.
And wasn't it $25 million?
Yes.
Wasn't that the price tag?
That's right.
I mean, the last person to be sold like that was Babe Ruth. This is not even what happens in baseball anymore.
Yes. The Yankees had bought a 12-year-old kid's arm for $25 million after like a week in the majors. Okay, so this is really bad scouting by the 93 Yankees at this point in time. We then get to the ultimate series where they are in a one-game playoff, basically. Game 163, Mets and Cubs. The Cubs have gone on this amazing run. Wrigley Field, game 163. Winner wins the National League East and advances directly to the World Series. It's a weird year for the postseason structure of Major League Baseball, but winner here is going to go directly.
Was there an epidemic at some point during that season as well?
What's that?
Was there an epidemic during that season as well that we had to reconfigure things to go right from division rounds to World Series?
And also somebody let Cliff, a.k.a. John Candy, know it's not for all the marbles when it's not the World Series either, when you're just playing for a division title.
That's a fair point. And he used a couple of other it's for all of the, and it included a couple of phrases I've never heard of, like the entire Megillah, I think he said. It's for the whole Megillah or something. So what the heck
I've
is
heard
this?
That before.
The whole ball of wax.
The whole ball of wax, that's one of them. Okay, so we're into this game, game 163.
Oh.
And we got the owner doesn't know the price of hot dogs of this game. Oh. But I do have to say, Stedman, Gary Busey, has the guttiest play in baseball history. He's blown out his arm, okay, and he's on the field, and he has to make a play. But even before that, we get to this game, and the manager tells Gary Busey Stedman in the locker room, you're pitching today. And Busey's like, I don't got nothing left. How do you not set up your pitching rotation for game 163? How do you let your starter know 5 minutes before the game he's starting, Mraz?
This is a disgrace. And if I am the other starter who we did not see here, who was named as a probable in the Chicago Tribune when you woke up this morning, how is the locker room not torn apart? What do you mean we're starting? Stedman hasn't pitched now in a couple of weeks. He's been doing nothing but eating Twinkies. Now he's going to start our biggest game of the year?
Yeah.
And what kind of confidence that is still in the rest of your rotation? You clearly had a starter pegged. We clearly, Chicago Sports Radio was talking about it all day long. Who's going to start that game? And Stedman gets to start an hour before game time? Martinella sucks.
It is indicative, Bogues, of just poor management by Martinella, the manager, throughout this entire episode of Henry Rowan Gardner.
I understand the logistics of it because your first concern is, you know, Stedman's shoulder's about to fall off. He needs hours of, like, prehab to get that bad boy loose and ready to be at his best. You can't just say, hey, you're pitching in 10 minutes. But what I did appreciate is this moment of growing up from Martinella. I mean, again, he was the one that bowed to ownership and took Stedman out of the rotation. He's the one that's being too nice to his pitching coach who can't do his job. Now, finally, he puts his foot down and makes a decision, shows some chutzpah, and puts Stedman on the mound in the most important game in Cubs history in decades. Mm-hmm. And he went to his workhorse to get the job done.
Stedman gets on the mound. He guts his way through a number of innings. He has a lead late. He's got to get a late out. His arm actually tears basically off of its socket during the pitch. He fields the ball. The only way he can get the ball to home with a bang-bang play at the plate is to actually run it himself. Now, there's a little bit of a delay in his decision-making there, but ultimately decides he's going to tag the runner out, throws his body in front of the runner to tag out the Mets runner that would have been the go-ahead or the tying run. That's a huge gutty play, Mraz. That goes down to the history books. Stedman has one of the guttiest plays in baseball history.
I mean, it's that and the Jeter flip play for me, but I still think a little theatrics. Even with a blown-out arm, you can't soft-toss underhand the ball to the catcher. I mean, we don't need the bullet there. We don't need the rocket. I don't understand why you can't toss the ball.
Well, I guess the arm was really in a bad way. So, Stedman has to come out, okay? His arm is gone. He's shot. That brings in Rowan Gardner, and he's got to find a way to save this game.
Now I'm going to give Martinella credit here. Ahead of the curve, going to your closer in the seventh inning.
Right. Yes. So it's going to be a long night's work for the 12-year-old Henry Rowengartner. By the way, Martinell is a disaster the entire season. Doesn't even learn Rowengartner's name. The entire year he doesn't learn Rowengartner's name. He is the most important piece of your puzzle as you go on a stretch run. His name's being chanted in the stands, talked about on the score 12-6, or the score in Chicago. It's in the Chicago Tribune. How do you not know your star player's last name, calling him Henry Rowenhoser and things like this? It's really Gardenhoser. It's a bad job at Martinella. He goes to Henry early. Henry gets through the sixth, gets through the seventh, gets through the end, takes us to the ninth. He comes out cheering fans. He's about to close down game 163, send the Cubs to the World Series, slips on a baseball on the pitcher's mound, falls down, blows out his arm again, and now he realizes the magic's gone. He's got nothing left. This is an incredible turn. It is totally Cubs history to be at the doorstep of greatness and to lose it, Mraz.
Yes, this is peak Cubs. This is Bartman before Bartman. This is ridiculous tension now in Wrigley.
So here's the problem. Henry knows he doesn't have it anymore, knows he can't throw a pitch, starts basically intentionally walking.
The Mets
hitters. How does Henry not tell Martinella, I don't have it? How does his catcher not say, hey, we can't do this? How do the infielders not tell Martinella, hey, his arm's not here? They've got to make a change.
This is where I bang on the ceiling. He tells the infielders, I lost it, guys. I got nothing left. And nobody signals to the dugout. There's seven other arms in that bullpen. And their best bet is to let Henry Rowengartner run not one, but two trick plays and then throw a freaking floater like a softball pitcher in the Olympics to get out of the inning to send the Cubs to the World Series. They don't have a worthy enough arm out of that pen to come out and get him three damn outs. Are you kidding me, Martinella?
It's also the most disgraceful inning in Mets history. And coming from a Mets fan, Bogus, you and I mean, the Mets have runners on base because Henry has no arm left. And they keep getting picked off on trick plays. They're getting taunted by Henry that they're chicken, that they won't run. And they're getting the old hidden ball trick. They got two guys picked off. All you got to do is let Henry intentionally walk the game-winning run in. All you need is four walks here. Oh.
Somehow, the fact that the Cubs went, he's just a kid again, we're going to leave him in, was not the worst decision in that inning.
Correct.
It was by the two Mets base runners.
Unbelievable.
Now, I guess we've all fallen for the hidden ball trick. It happens all the time, so that's one thing.
Okay.
But then the second guy...
taunted.
You keep that foot on the base. You go nowhere. You don't get taunted into stealing by a kid rolling a ball in your direction going, I can't get it, you should run. And go, oh, you know what, I should run. Let me go run. And then he's out.
Terrible base running. It is the worst running gaffe in baseball history. All the Mets have to do, they know a 12-year-old kid's on the mound with a chance to go to the World Series. He's got no arm left. Take the intentional walks. Let him walk you right around. Win the game. Go to the World Series. Instead, you're getting into will he, won't he take the extra base against Henry Rowengartner? What are you doing? Mraz, this is the darkest moment in Mets history.
It is. Look, people want to talk about Beltran bat on the shoulder, and you go down the line. The Mets have been a troubled franchise. The fact that you had a 12-year-old with no other bullpen, no other person warming up, with nothing in the tank, and you allow yourself after the hidden ball trick to get pegged for that, and then your slugger comes up to the surprise of Sal Martinella, the Cubs manager, and he's whiffing it float. That whole inning, if I'm a Met fan,
it's a meltdown.
I smash my TV. I mean, that's it. That's it as a Met fan. That is peak Met fandom when happened in Rookie of the Year. That is the worst inning in Mets history.
It's a meltdown. Beltran on the shoulder. Nothing compared to this. 2015, Matt Harvey left in too long, World Series. Nothing compared to this. You know, the choke jobs in 07, 08, nothing compared to that. This is the darkest moment in Mets history. 12-year-old has nothing left on the mound. Ninth inning, game 163. You can't find a way to score a run because you get two guys picked off. The Cubs end up winning. They end up winning this series, winning this game, going to the World Series. We don't see the World Series, but Henry Rowengartner decides, I'm quitting. What do we think? Is that a mature decision by Henry? Or, frankly, you know, kind of have to worry about mental toughness if he can't even continue the postseason into the World Series?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of both. But look, if you've made whatever money you've made for too much, you want to go be a kid, be a kid. But if that's me and I'm in the majors, I'm milking it for all I'm worth. Even if I say my arm's blown out, I'm not telling anybody that. I'm signing a $25 million contract for a year. I'm getting that guaranteed money, and then I'll go be a kid at 14 years old.
Rookie of the Year, the breakdown here for Get Your Popcorn Ready, the Mothership at the Movies. Next week, we will do Happy Gilmore in honor of what the Masters should have been this weekend.
And DA, I think Permission Granted Podcast is going to be released a little later. I think we should get into a little more of this that we might have missed as well.
I think you're right. Some cutting room floor stuff from the PGP a little bit later on today that'll be released. Andrew Bogish has your headlines. Good morning, Andrew.
DA, those headlines sponsored by Ace Hardware. Ace is committed to helping our communities in this time of need, so your local store remains open. Pick up in-store, curbside, or have us deliver. Help is just around the block. See acehardware.com for details. Tom Brady's on the Howard Stern Show this morning. The new Buccaneer says his decision to leave New England wasn't about legacy. It was just time for a change. Stern asked Brady if he resented Bill Belichick for not letting him be a Patriot for life, and TB12 said no emphatically. Without Tua Tagovailoa's major hip injury, we might be in the middle of real drama surrounding the number one pick later this month. Should the Bengals take Tua or Joe Burrow? But instead, Burrow to Cincinnati. Is a foregone conclusion, and we've got no idea where Tua and that hip end up. The Bama QB isn't wasting any energy on guessing.
I would say I have no control over the circumstance. If I were to be healthy, if I weren't, I'd still have no control. The best thing that I can do is continue to work, and I believe whatever team decides to choose me, I mean, I'd be grateful to be on their
Tua
team.
Tua speaking yesterday on NFL Network. Now, someone can fact check me on this, but I think the last Minnesota legend to have his jersey retired is the unnamed one we put into our rafters a few years ago. Kevin Garnett deserves this honor in the Twin Cities, but apparently he dislikes T-Wolves owner Glenn Taylor like we dislike our unnamed friend. Mm-hmm. Direct quote from KG, "I don't do business with snakes." The issue apparently an agreement that would have made Garnett a minority owner of the team once he was done playing, but according to KG, that promise went away when Flip Saunders passed away in 2015. And CNBC says the NBA Players Association briefed agents yesterday on looming salary reductions for all players. Their next paycheck comes next week. One agent told CNBC owners may ask for as much as 50% of those checks to be withheld until the end of the league's fiscal year, which is July. DA, back to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Bogues. Yeah, you know what? Those retirement ceremonies for Minnesota legends, they can be a little sticky. When we come back here on the show, Advanced Analytics and Your Epic Fail. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know, maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
Today's poll question was the ninth inning meltdown against Henry Rowengartner by the Mets in Rookie of the Year, the worst moment in franchise history. On Twitter, 57% said yes. Facebook, very similar, 58% of you said yes. Meltdown, ninth inning, game 163. Against Henry Rowengartner, a 12-year-old kid on the mound. Worst moment in Mets franchise history. By the way, some other anecdotes about this. Joe Nuxall was the youngest player in modern Major League history. He pitched one game in 1944. At age 15, he gave up five runs and was removed. 20th Century Fox in the early planning stages for a remake of Rookie of the Year. We'll tear that one apart as well. Time for your question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. But first, a little reminder that our toll-free line sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home, hard work, get a quote, geico.com. That's easy. Our Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. Mike is in Chicago and says, DA, I love that breakdown of Rookie of the Year. I've loved all of the movie breakdowns. Wondering, how long will you guys keep this thing going? Beyond the quarantine? Well, the idea was born out of the quarantine because we knew we needed games to break down, and what better games to break down than sports movies that everybody have seen. I don't know if this will continue beyond the quarantine. Let's see how long we go. Let's see how long we go without sports. But I can tell you it's been immediately the last 3 weeks, my favorite segments do every week. I've really loved watching these movies as though they were games and then jotting down notes. I mean, we all here on the show, we are trained to watch games, take down notes, think about talk topics, and these movies have given us that feeling again. So next week is Happy Gilmore in honor of Masters Week, and we'll continue with this as long as we need to, but who knows? Maybe after quarantine, we'll keep doing it. I've really enjoyed it. Seems like you guys have really enjoyed it as well. We've had a lot of good feedback. Adriana tweets, "This is the most amazing segment ever. Continue doing Get Your Popcorn Every Day Until Sports is back, as far as I'm concerned. Hashtag funky butt loving." Michael tweets, "Man, I remember this film when I was younger. I love these reviews about various sports movies so far." And Cigar City Capo tweets, "The Yankees signing Henry, typical George Steinbrenner knee-jerk reaction. The dynasty later was saved by Al Percolo finding Steve Nebraska in The Scout. Hashtag Piggy Doodle Yankees. The Scout could be a good one as well." Hemsky tweets, "Throwing at a 13-year-old kid? Sounds good. Signed the Duke from Major League who threw at his son at a father-son game." And Foxy tweets, "Bro, the pain. Loving this breakdown of Rookie of the Year today." Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. We had to take to task Cubs management from Rookie of the Year. Here is your epic fail.
Even the DH show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Let's get to the manager, Martinella, here. Okay, Martinella's hit tough times. The Cubs are bad again. He's probably going to get fired by the end of the season. They see Henry Rohngartner throw this seed from center field bleachers, and they're like, "We got to get this kid." Martinella shows up to his house, knocks on the door.
"Hello, son. I'm looking for Henry Ruhlenfurter."
How does Martinella not have something else to do here? You got to send your scout team. You got to send your GM, somebody in personnel. Mraz, Martinella wasting time going to a 13-year-old kid's house in the middle of the season. He's in a pennant stretch here. He cannot be allocating time to go track down this kid. He's got to be at the facility watching film. Stettman throws 8 2/3, I think. And then they put Henry Rohngartner in the game with two outs in the ninth.
"Rosenbagger, warm up. You're going in."
They've never seen him play baseball, guys. The Cubs organization, the scouting of Henry Rohngartner has been a disaster, and his usage to put him in the first game in a save situation for Stettman, to me, is a nightmare.
"Sorry, your door seems to be malfunctioning. I'll get housekeeping up here."
"Thank you."
Totally a nightmare, and ownership calling down to make that call as if Stedman's the biggest bum in the world. Well, how big a bum is he if he just gave you 8 2/3 and you win in the ballgame?
That's right. I believe the Cubs, by my math, had a 5-3 lead, two outs in the ninth.
By my math.
Stedman's got you there. You got to ride Stedman.
Keep his score.
"You take it easy. Henry's been sold to the Yankees."
"They sold me? You can't do that."
"Of course I can. I'm the manager."
You got to ride Stedman. You know, Rohngartner nearly blows the game because you've never seen him throw a baseball before in a competitive situation.
And how do you not get him out of the game when the first pitch is a home run, the second pitch is hit by batter? At that point, Martinella's going to get out there going, "It's not the day for you, kid."
Exactly.
How do you let him work his way out of it?
We've never seen you.
Now it's not the time to work your way out of it.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
We had some fun at the beginning of this hour because we were joking about how nobody listens to me on this show as I spew off incorrect facts about Justin Verlander's salary. But in all seriousness, this segment is a reason why I love doing the show every day. The guys here on the show are amazing to work with, and I think it's good for a laugh. And I know that we all kind of need a laugh right now. So these have been difficult times to figure out from a life standpoint. We hope that this show provides a little bit of lightheartedness, a little bit of levity, a little bit of laughs, and the guys here on the show do an absolute bang-up job, and I feel really lucky to work with all of them every single day. Sean Mraz, executive producer of the show. Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel and audio director. Andrew Bogish on your headlines. Andrew Kaplan, your Wizard of WatchDA.com. Billy Giacalone behind the scenes as well. This is one of the best teams in radio. I'm fortunate to be part of it. Hopefully you guys enjoy what you hear every single day. I encourage you to be good to one another, stay positive. We will see you tomorrow. The Mothership Disconnects.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.